That makes sense.
Yeah, it'll be curious to see.
Yeah. So there's the video. Oh, there's a participant already.
It's
Oh, okay. Thanks. And
So,
then
plain
so then you're
post? Plain post? Over here? And the over here? Is that where we need to go? That one?
that on the
Oh, okay,
email?
or click the login to claim, where it says or login to claim host. And
There I am.
did that allow claiming the host?
I'm not sure. Oh, this is.
Go, okay, click the
Should I just
call
minimize it?
your message.
Claim
Now
host.
try it again. Did you think it would give you like a oh, there we
Here's my
go.
login. Is this my
It's
Zoom
your
login it wants?
it should have hours. We need
What's a
hours to
Zoom?
log in, right? Some cloud meetings. So this should be login, should be our login, and Okay, so you want me to plug that in?
Yeah, have at
Great.
it.
And where's
It's
like delete? Yeah. So info at IC. Oops. Org. And then cfnewmexico.org. And then it's NMIC. NMICF pound 16.
So that looks right up here.
Okay. And then back to meeting. And then host. Excellent.
Yay! Great. And then is there a way to show the slides to the person?
Yes. You can share your screen
Yeah,
to do
is that
that, but
this?
then if you're doing that, so yeah, do that. And then you want to share your whatever your PowerPoint is. Should bring that up.
That's weird. Desktop.
Maybe click advanced and see if that's coming near. Oh.
Because I don't want to show the Outlook Google Chrome
Just like it's not
or
seeing.
my thing or my. That's weird.
Can we go?
What if we share desktop, but then go?
Oh wait, what did you just do?
I have it sharing desktop.
You got a bar over there. You go. Wait,
Oh,
is your PowerPoint for
yeah.
me? Yeah.
Then what if we go like this?
So, are you on it? On your, you're going to be on it on your computer too.
I can be.
Oh, so this
Like
is a.
that way, if people have questions.
Yes, I can do that. This is such an experiment.
So this is interesting too. So I've got the PowerPoint on. Oh, so I'll hit share.
Show.
Oh, so that's what's.
Oh no, I guess
Okay.
they are seeing it.
Yeah.
So they'll be seeing your slides, they'll hear you, but they won't necessarily see
So see, they'll see. I don't know what they're
there.
seeing.
So can you log in to see what you're seeing as a
Yeah, that's a great question. Great test.
see it.
What do you see?
I see your slides.
Do you see me?
I see you in a little bubble on the right, so I see
I didn't, yes.
That way, if people send something in the chat box,
Oh, great.
yeah.
That's great.
Well, hi, Bryn. How are you?
And then I wonder, how do we
you
get
look,
them in a room?
So in the room, we go from, I think, let's see, I have my notes up.
Well,
yes,
wasn't meant to be a trick question.
No, hey, we're just having this conversation. That's why.
Where is this?
There's 1.5 cc.
Maybe what we could do is, are you going to be monitoring
but
online?
As you can see,
great. As much as I can, I'm
right
there.
Right.
So typically,
but I have a thing that says the, I went through the tutorial earlier, and there's a, I think, go to meeting. I think maybe.
So we need to be flexing it right here.
No problems.
Meeting unmute. Let's see. Manage show no.
And it's at 5:30, so I kind of cruise in, you know, 5:31. Started. I was like, oh my god.
Oh, hello.
Different things here.
Yeah.
Where's the.
Anyway, so I didn't know
that. We.
I'm not.
No. Definitely not.
Let's see. So, let's see.
Hey, can I help you?
And I just had a moment. Let's see. Please. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Sorry.
Thing.
I'm grabbing some of
it.
It's a quarantine section.
Yeah. We may have to ask them to.
There you go.
To use the chat function
to get questions. So this, as of this morning, I think there were two people who were going to join virtually, but I think Ildi's going to. She emailed me like, "Oh, I can't make it," and I joined virtually. Here is this. Do I need the? Leave it right there.
Yes.
Yeah, we're just fingers crossed with it. I'm sure it's working.
When you hear them, can you
ask them? They are. Okay. So if you can you hear them? No?
I can try.
It's true, right? Hi, Carla, how are you?
I've muted everything.
You know, that's one thing we didn't think of was,
yes.
What if they just joined by phone? They couldn't do breakout rooms. So we might have to go. Experiment. Thank you for being such a good sport.
No problem. And I will announce at the beginning that this is a big experiment and that the people online could have a highly variable experience.
That's such a generous thing to say. Highly variable. I like that. I'm so sorry. I feel so, I'm just so nervous.
I would be too. It's not a problem. I'm not a problem. And yeah, my husband was super fascinated by it. Tried to look into it, and he's like,
I can't take on this stuff. But it's not good. Somebody has that account. It's not in Carolina. I know this. Yeah, because I looked. I was like, who has this account? And so, do you email them? No, but I'm thinking online because this is not resolving. So I've got to call someone. This is messy.
Yeah. So.
Okay, no worries.
I'm
No, it's not the first one.
Technically, at
4:30.
Hello, everyone. I can just all take a seat, please.
I figure I should stay by the computer.
You probably should. So welcome to the first experiment of a Zoom meeting for one of our sessions. Thanks so much for being here. My name is Shelley Lanier. I sit on the programs committee, and our chair, Lisa Brewer, is not able to be with us, so I'm sort of standing in for her. So thank you all for coming today and for being here. We have a lovely time planned for us today with Elizabeth Roll. We're going to be working through, as you can see, Coaching and Change. Tell you a little bit about Elizabeth, and then she'll tell you more about herself as we go along. So Elizabeth is a senior strategist and executive coach at Sandia. Various areas of expertise are in strategic planning, change management, and leadership development. She is a Gestalt professional coach, a board-certified coach, and ICFPCC coach. And today's a special day for her, and I'll let her tell us why.
This is my last work event before I go on vacation. And I was thinking, what a great way to end. I love this topic. I like to talk about coaching. I love the community. So thanks for being my last event before some time off. Bless you. There's lots of, I think it's the colds going around and the wind. So blessings across the seasons as they emerge today. I usually like to move around when I am presenting, and this is going to be different for me because I'm going to need to stay by the computer so the microphone picks me up. So if I seem stiff in my presentation style, that's why. So today's presentation is on coaching around change management. I've talked about change management in to this community before. I got into thinking about change and change management when I started doing strategy work, because every time someone was calling to talk about strategy, they were inevitably talking about change that they wanted to bring into their organization. So I found the two wove very closely together. And then I also found that I was spending lots of time one-on-one with the leaders I was working with, talking about strategy, talking about change. And then I sort of realized, I'm actually coaching in these conversations. So for me, it's a triangle of lenses that for me fit really well together when I work with clients. The strategy, the change, and the executive leadership coaching. So that's the lens I bring to my work and informs what you're going to hear me talk about today. There we go. So there are a couple things we're going to do today. We're going to walk through a structured approach to talking with our clients about change. It's the five steps of this model. And ideally, I want all the coaches in the room and who are online to be able to walk away with a few more skills, a few more lenses, a bit more empowered to talk with your clients about change. We're going to go through this in a really structured format. And my intent for you is to have structure here so you can take it into your work with more nimbleness. So we'll be a little bit more process focused to get the ideas embedded. But ideally, then you'll make it your own and pull on this as it works for you as you work with your clients. So I'm going to talk about two aspects of different change projects. One is I'm going to talk about the nightmare project. These are features that I've noticed commonly show up on nightmare projects with clients. Come on in. There's a sign up in the back, and you grab a seat at the table. Oh, Grace has a sign up. So as I think about nightmare projects, they have sponsors who are mercurial and demanding, changing what they want,
kind of showing up in meetings, being bombastic oftentimes, or unclear in what they need and leaving. Teams might be in conflict. I'll notice teams on change projects that are not working well are on roughly a monthly to 6 week basis. We'll say, I think we need to have a roles and responsibilities conversation. For me, whenever a team is asked, we need to talk about roles and responsibilities, that to me is a signal. Something's not working, and this is a fix for whatever might be underpinning it. Stakeholders are attacking the project. They'll have meetings and meetings. Never seem to have progress. Timelines start expanding. Lots of setbacks. Teams might get reformulated. The leader might say, we need a different team, or we need to bring some new people on the team to make this work. And the physical experience for me on these projects is just this exhaustion. It's a marathon that you're running and running, and it never seems to end. So I've had those projects. I see some nods in the room. You probably had them too. I notice as I talk about it, I have like a visceral response. Like my stomach gets kind of tight right now as I'm describing it. Like I hate these projects. But then we also have the dream project. Engaged, a sponsor, super high standards, a team that has a lot of trust. You're no longer having those. We need to talk about roles and responsibilities that it's just sort of known. And work flows between the members for who might be suited for the task. A lot of support for team members. Stakeholders have high expectations of the project. There's always a sense of forward momentum when you're at team meetings. You get a sense of, oh, things are moving forward. It's hard, but things are moving. And it can still feel like a marathon, but you see the finish line and there's some constant energy in the system to move forward. As I was reflecting on projects that I've been in that have both the nightmare aspects and the dream aspects, one of the things I noticed is that if they fell on the right or left, it had nothing to do with the complexity of the project. I could think of projects that were department-based, with 10 people that might be on either side, and I could think of institution-wide projects that I've been on that have been on either side. Lots of money or not a lot of money. Lots of stakeholders. There are a few key stakeholders. And I realized that the complexity of the change being proposed didn't impact whether or not something was a nightmare or a dream. So I got really curious then, what creates a dream project if it's not the complexity or the span or the scope of the change project being instituted. So I got really curious about that and wanted to make sense of that because there's something beyond complexity of a project that's driving where it's at. And that led me to put together these five factors for change. These are very consistent with the 20-some years of change management theory and ideas. But this is my synthesis of how it makes sense to me. And it's a structure that I found useful for talking to clients about what's going on with their project. So instead of pulling out the canon of change management literature every time I sat down with a client, for me this has been a useful checklist that I put together to work with clients as they were talking about change. And so what I'm going to do is, I'm going to hand my hand up. Yeah, I noticed some of you printed up before coming. Is what we're going to do in our time today is move through each one of these factors and talk about them. And then what we'll do after we walk through them is do an experiential where we'll have you coach each other using this structure to get a feel for what are questions to ask or what are answers that you might hear come up and what might the conversation be with someone as you're talking about change using this framework. Makes sense for our time? All right, the first one is a clear need for change. Making the case for why, starting with why. I'm not here to advocate that. I think lots of researchers have made the case for why it's important to be clear on the purpose of the change. But when I get curious, hi, welcome, no problem. But what I get curious about is why is it so hard to make the case for change? What gets in the way of being clear on why the need for change is so hard? And I've spent a lot of time thinking about it, and I come up with a couple things. One is that whenever there is a system in place, there are always winners and losers in the status quo. And any change seeks to upset that status quo. And so the people who are on the loser side of whatever the change might be, or perceive that, who might currently be in a winner seat, they have a lot at stake when a change is being proposed. When I'm coaching leaders and I notice they're struggling to make the case for change, what I notice is they're not often attuned to the people who are at risk of losing something in the organization with the change that they are proposing. And so in a coaching setting, there's often a lot of coaching around empathy at this part of working with the leader. Asking them, well, you know, who in the system is resisting you? Who might stand to lose in this proposal? And what might they be afraid of? So that's one of the aspects, is not being attuned to who the current winners or losers are in the status quo and how that gets disrupted with the change. The other thing I notice in coaching leaders around change and when they're struggling to establish the clear need is they're usually so close to the change that they're proposing that they cannot see the downsides of it. They are so in love with whatever the idea is that they're proposing, they can only see the upsides and can't even imagine the downsides or the consequences or the risks of it. And so again, coaching may often be like, so what do you think are the downsides of this? What's the other side of the coin? What do you think are the downstream consequences? Have you talked with your stakeholders around what they might see as the consequences? And if your leader is saying, it's going to be awesome, you got to have a conversation and find a way to gracefully have the conversation on, let's get real. There's never a perfect change. And another thing I'll often do with leaders is try to remind them, you've resisted change. You've been on the receiving end of change. What was that like when change was done to you? And I have the benefit of being an internal coach, so I know a lot of the organization history. So I can often pull out specific examples in the institution of, you know, hey, remember that proposal your colleague made? You didn't like that back then. You're now on that side. So trying all sorts of ways to try to get the leader to sit on the other side of the table to imagine what it's like to hear the change, all with an intention of helping the leader build. Sandia recently has implemented a huge change around the promotions process and some of the compensation system. And one of the things I've noticed in the presentations that executive leadership has given on this is they spend a lot of time explaining why. The constraints of the system, why they had to do what they did, philosophical reasons for it. But then they do something really interesting, is they then immediately turn the corner and say, and here's the downside consequences of this system that we've just had to implement. And they speak at length about the downside and the consequences and what they're doing to mitigate them and sort of the next steps. There's a sense that we're doing this change now, but this is not done. That there's more to come, and there's more conversations to be had. And what I notice at Sandia right now with that is I very rarely hear people say, why are they doing this? I hear a lot of complaints about how they're doing the change, but that's a different question. But that I'm pretty impressed with on this particular change at Sandia, that the why is not questions. And I've even heard people who don't like the change explain the why to me. Like, they get the why. They don't like it, but they understand it. They get it, and they hate the way it's being implemented. And they can separate those two things. So I find that an interesting example of a way to communicate the change. So as we're coaching our leaders to say, making the case for change is about what the upside is, but also about explaining to people the consequences, the downside, and what the mitigations are, what the plans are. Any questions or comments as I'm chatting about this, what you've seen or experienced with the leaders you work with? I'm going to take a sip of that.
Yeah. In other words, this is tracking in parallel with a lot of major methodologies, which I'm sure you've
explored. Absolutely.
One of the most interesting things that you're citing actually is that wallet saying is talk about the reasons and understanding reasons for change.
Yep.
And that is absolutely vital in neuroscience, is giving us lots of insights on the fact that
absolutely
brain likes certainty. Mm-hmm. And so that's important. And then I hear you at the same time mention how many complaints you get on the how.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether you get to it, but certainly the notion of holding on to what needs to change.
Yeah.
And then letting go of the possible.
Mm-hmm.
The how
yeah.
is a very successful approach as well. So you say we have to change this aspect, that's an
option. Yeah.
But how we get there,
yeah.
and engage the stakeholders mm-hmm. on how, mm-hmm. then you can overcome lots of resistance that otherwise is going to cause lots of problems.
Yeah. I'm going to talk about some of the hows that I have ideas about. And let's make sure we come back to it if you have ideas to add to the discussion.
I just try to fill in some.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Does anybody ever look at that, whenever you do change your organization?
Yeah.
Does it matter? And in the situation where they're all like,
oh, yeah. So thank you. The question is does anybody ever like change? I think that if people are getting something from a change, that they'll like that more money, more some sort of benefit from it. And I've seen people like change if they can imagine the upside. Yeah. I have seen some stuff implemented well. I also have in my maturing as a strategist and person in the professional world, come to peace with not everyone's going to be happy all the time. So, which makes me a little uncomfortable because I kind of like for everybody to be happy all the time. So, I have seen places it's done. We'll get through, and I have some examples. Yeah, John.
I remember a CEO at Sandia about 3 years ago did exactly what they were talking about, what they were doing to mitigate some of the consequences.
Yeah.
And he talked to 800 people about changing retiring health care.
Mm-hmm.
And he got a standing ovation.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, and they were losing benefits.
Yes.
And he got a standing ovation because he was so good at saying, here's what's happened, here's why, and here's how we're dealing with it. Yeah, it's there's something about the acknowledging the consequences. It's a way of acknowledging the people in the room. Yeah. One more comment before you. Thank you, Paul.
Talk about something that I don't think is ever said out loud. Especially when it's a change, not about what retiring benefits, but maybe an internal procedure. Mm-hmm. It's like maybe there's some implied blame here. Somebody's guilty.
Yeah. Someone's bad. Yeah.
Right. And I think that needs to be addressed as well.
Yeah. That's well put. That's a great point. That there can be an inadvertent accusation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that's true. Yeah.
What comes to mind is the new leader coming into an organization. They don't know really what the need for change is and mm-hmm. how they identify what the needs are
mm-hmm.
and how to follow up with them.
Yeah. So the question is, you're talking about new leaders, and this is especially challenging.
I don't think the person may not have been, new as a leader, but new to that
new to the organization.
Hi, how are you?
Good, welcome. Yes, absolutely. I think this, if you're new to an organization, knowing how to get the pulse on the organization is really hard.
And you're explaining this is how I am doing it.
Yeah, this is how
or
I'm finding out.
To get to the change is so that when you come to the next meeting, and this is what I found,
Yeah. I'm going to repeat what you said just so the people online can hear it. So you'll let me know if I get it right. So you're talking about the challenge of when you're new to an organization, how do you communicate the why? And that you've seen a lot of power in a first 90 days approach where they share with people how they're learning about the organization and then what they've learned about the organization and engage people in that conversation. Did I get it? Okay. Thank you. I'm going to push us on to the next one, which is constant and second feature of successful change projects that I've experienced is a constant, clear executive sponsorship. There's tons of coaching opportunities around this one with the leaders that we work with. And this one is really about leadership matters. It sets the tone for a project and the expectations for the change. And it signals legitimacy for the activity as well. So it sends a signal to the organization that this is important, that this leader is highly involved in and is truly engaging as a sponsor. Let's talk about what real sponsorship looks like, because I've seen lots of bad sponsorship. So I'm going to talk about when it's been really positive, and I'll share a story from an experience that I had on a team. I had a team that I was working on that had stakeholders from across the organization and were tasked with redesigning an engineering process. And stakeholders who had very different points of view on how this process should be done. Lots of underpinning issues around responsibility and authorities and accountabilities that underpin who got to do what and say what in the decision process. And the leader of the project spent a number of hours with the team, listening to the different perspectives of the different stakeholders, understanding the boundary constraints, really talking through polarities, things that seem in tension with each other but are really intertwined with each other. This leader also was able to say, this is the stuff that has to happen, and this is the stuff that's really nice to happen. When team members would ask him to come and talk with the team, they'd say, you know, we need to make these decisions. And he said, no, you don't. This is the only, the key decision you make. The other stuff will flow from it. That he could actually engage in content conversations with the team, give advice, draw boundaries, say what was in scope and out of scope. He would also go to bat for the team. There were times this team was under fire and he took fire for the team. Also held the team to extremely high standards. I was on the team and we at one point had a big stumble and we had a rough wire brushing with the leader on how we were not meeting his expectations. It happened in private. It happened once and nobody outside the team got headlines about it unless, you know, a team member chose to go. But the leader never talked badly about the team outside of the project. The team did great. We and fell in love with the leader. We finished the project in a really lovely way. But that was a really unique experience for me with a leader. I was so used to leaders coming in saying, you know, saying all the right things. I'm here for you guys. You know, you guys can do this, but not actually engaging in the content. I remember in teams where I think that we didn't have good sponsorship, we would present the dilemmas to the leader, and the leader wouldn't have a perspective on it. I mean, so that to me is really important to look at what sponsorship is. It's being able to engage with the team on the content, being able to represent the complexity of the project outside of it, standing up for the team in public, and speaking sharply to the team in private when it's needed. I've often spent time with leaders and had to say, let's talk about the issues of this project. Can you speak to the issues of it? What are the dilemmas of the project? To help the leader see, like, what does that next step look like? Instead of just saying, I gave it to the team, I don't understand what's going wrong, I actually ask the leader to dive down a little bit more and think about what their opinions of the dilemmas of the project are super important. To be able to speak about the project complexity and guide the team through the complexity of the decisions and understand their role as a leader to set those boundaries and to trust the team in executing to those boundaries once they get set. I've recently, Grace and I were recently involved with Sandia's leadership program called the National Security Leadership Development Program. And we, in that program, did some work on commander's intent. It's a model that's used in the military very frequently. And I've started working with leaders on using this as a model to communicate what they're trying to get out of a team. And it's got three ingredients. It's got, what is your purpose? And we ask, and I'll sit with leaders and I say, what is your purpose? Why are we doing this? It's getting back to why. And then the second part is, what is the end state? What does this need to look like when we're on the other side of all of this time? And then the next part are key tasks. Sometimes I think about it, that is boundaries. And that's where the leader can start articulating